The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, that dumb fish who doesn't trust his gut, Paul Dana Jr., and Fletcher Page, take you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. This is the Bengals podcast, the OG, presented by 50 West Brewing Company. I'm Paul Leonard Jr. here with my partner on the beat, Fletcher Page. It's the midway point. We've officially made it halfway through the regular season. You sort of.
I made it through five games.
Yeah, but those you made it through six games.
Oh, that's right. I don't mean to sell myself short.
You sold yourself very short. It's hard to keep it all in line at a certain point. Look, when you've been to Cancun so many times, the rest of your life becomes a bit of a blur.
You don't get those brain cells back.
No. You don't. So thanks everybody for jumping back on with us. We've got the BBP this week. We're recording this before Beyond the Stripes, but Beyond the Stripes Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. At Holy Grail Banks, but Sam Hubbard is our guest. We'll have some of that. We'll pop up later, probably in next week's BBP. No deuce this week because no game this week. We get to take a weekend for us.
We get to ride out.
Right, weekend for the boys. Right. or at least for the family, and then, you know, overdoing it on chocolates that were acquired during Halloween trick-or-treating. I plan on really going after my daughter's bag of chocolates. My first opportunity to really, like, she's going to really trick or treat for the first time. Mm-hmm. So this is my chance, like, to really live those old days of just, for the next week, you just eat way too much chocolate and constantly have an upset stomach.
Nice low-key perk for having kids.
It's why you do it.
Candy thieving.
Yeah. Yeah. Very low-key perk. So we got that. We have lots up on the site right now. So roll on over to Cincinnati.com. We'll have a few more big stories coming through the rest of this week that we're currently working on. So including our midseason awards. Highly anticipated annual midseason look at the Bengals giving out our awards. We are going to sneak peek you some of those later in the podcast. MVP, biggest surprise, coach of the year, all that type of stuff. We're going to debate those and run through some of our potential picks, and you'll see the full story up on the site this week. So that is coming. We got lots to get to, though. So we have Hugh Jackson is gone. And Paul Alexander was also let go by Dallas Cowboys. That took them seven games. He was here with the Bengals for two decades. I'm not going to dive into a Paul Alexander rant. They probably held on to him too long here. He had a lot of good years here with a lot of very good tackles. It clearly did not work out for him in Dallas. Hugh Jackson is really interesting because Paul Alexander is not coming back here. Hugh Jackson might.
Why not?
Why not? It has happened before. He is very close with Marvin. That is as well known. I mean, there was previously a succession plan. in place for him to take over as the head coach when Marvin was going to leave after 2017. The question is, I asked Marvin yesterday, are you open to the idea of bringing him back? And Marvin said, I am not going to make a headline, which we, of course, then
made a headline.
We made a headline because it is a headline. There's only one way for that not to be a headline, and that's no.
Right. No, it still would have been a headline.
Marvin says no to
Hugh. Not bringing Hugh back.
Yeah. But still, that's the only way that anybody would suggest anything other than, okay, this could very well be happening. Should they or shouldn't they?
I don't see any reason from the Bengals' perspective not to do it, especially considering that they still have two games against the Browns. They play the Ravens again, Steelers again. I mean, these are teams that Hugh has intimate knowledge of. So I don't know what Hugh's, you know, personal situation is. I know that I remember from Hard Knocks that his mother and brother both passed away in August. So I don't know if maybe he wants to take some time away, or maybe he might want to throw himself back in and get stay in working. So, but from this side of it, it makes perfect sense.
Or maybe he wants to get back at the Browns.
Oh, even deeper.
Even deeper. Two wins against them would feel kind of sweet. At least one, some sense of. All I know is this, is that the relationship that Marvin and Hugh have is so tight.
Right.
And he could come here and literally just be. His title could be Marv's friend. Like, he literally could just be Marv's friend who's here and helping Marvin out. Honestly. Now, here's the problem, the issue with it is, and because if he can't show up here and have any sort of significant role, because then you have people looking over their shoulders. Bill Lazor is not a problem, and I've seen some of that.
Yeah, why on Twitter? Why
don't
we
know
holding
why
him accountable?
Bill Lazor is not a problem. This offense has been, all in all, damn good. Despite the decline, despite everything we talked about, in the big picture, they've been pretty damn good, especially when you throw in a lot of the injuries that's been thrown their way and other obstacles. I mean, you know, they're consistently putting up 30 points a game. You know, they've had this lull, but we'll see how that all, you know, turns out. They had four straight drives with touchdowns against Tampa. You do that in a game, and you should not be losing that game. It shouldn't even be close. So, you know, I have a hard time holding much of the offense, despite their problems in the second half and the inconsistency. They've got to work through that. But I'm hardly sitting here like Bill Lazor needs to be put in on notice, put in check. He needs Hugh standing there giving him tips. You know what it is? The moment someone shows up in your job with the term consultant next to them, they're taking your job at some point.
Get a little antsy.
No one likes that. And especially someone that, you know, and Hugh's been out of this game here as much as he knows some of these players, and he knows so much has changed. The entire offensive staff is different. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows a few guys on this offensive team. How many guys on this offense are even here from 2015? AJ, Andy, Gio, I guess, but, you know, not Mixon. Most of the line is new.
Just Clint.
CJ hadn't even played for you, basically. There you go. So it's not like there's like a million connections. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Andy's playing great. Like, don't mess with that. That's my only concern. You bring him in this door, and maybe some of the offensive people, like even Alex Van Pelt or anybody on that offensive staff, are looking around like, what is he doing here? What's he trying to do? What is he going to try to tell me?
Right. Well, maybe you just send him the tablet and tell him to dig in and help out a little bit. Maybe not be such a presence in the building.
Yeah. And he did that before. Right. And I think that's the thing. I mean, that there is a setup for him. I mean, when he came back from Oakland, people like to think, oh, yeah, he hopped in the office. He did not. He was a special teams and secondary assistant.
Which is wild, given the bulk, the complete rest of his resume.
Well, and that was the point.
Right.
He thought, and Marvin thought, for him to be a head coach again, a big thing would be for him to be able to get some, you know, work under a great special teams coach like Darren. You know, work and get some defensive stuff under your belt and learn some stuff from them and be able to offer those people input from how you would attack them offensively from an offensive mind. I don't have any problem with that. I think you come in as Browns consultant and you have information on how to beat the Browns twice and Marv Buddy to help keep Marvin sane and maybe take a couple of guys under your wing who are maybe some loose cannons. Hell, maybe make him Tez coach. Lord knows Hugh has a graduate degree in handling dudes with crazy attitudes. Maybe I don't know what you do.
I like that. I hadn't thought about Tez coach.
Tez coach. Lord knows he needs one. Lord knows you constantly need to be monitoring the bear wrestler. You know? I don't know. You feel like they should do it?
Yeah, and I just from my perch, I wouldn't be so concerned about hurting anybody's feelings in the building as long as you're clear about what it is. And I think people would understand. I mean, this is a guy with just he and Marvin being so tight, I think, makes it an obvious move.
Knowledge of the division.
Right.
You've got – that's half your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Two Browns, which he has intimate knowledge of, and Steelers and Ravens.
Which he stayed
He
always.
Beat the Ravens. Right. He tied the Steelers.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, at the very least, has great knowledge of those teams and this division and a lot of that personnel, and probably has some interesting things to say about some of the Bengals personnel, even just as thoughts. It doesn't hurt to have another mind in the building. So I would not be surprised by it, and I wouldn't be against it. You just have to be careful how you institute it.
Certainly, certainly.
Too soon to tell is sort of the underlying message around here right now on whether it's going to happen. But Marvin did not say no. I mean, but Marvin, in fairness, had not even talked to Hugh yet. He might talk to Hugh, and Hugh might be like, I just need to get away from the world. I don't want to be – I need to decompress on this, you know. Because that the last time did not happen midseason. That it was a full off season. He could go away for the rest of this year and jump back in the game next year.
Yeah, dude, spend a few weekends in Cancun.
That's it.
Get recharged.
Get it all recharged. Do not recommend that. I want to jump into a question that we asked on the walkout and kind of continue on this. With insight from Terrell Austin. We asked, is this defense salvageable? And obviously, this being the question of the second half of the season is can they figure out, I mean, the records, you know, they're the second worst mark for yardage allowed through 8 games in a season in NFL history, Super Bowl era. You know, they're on pace for the worst third down conversion rate in NFL history. They're on pace to set a franchise record for most points allowed. They're, you know, it's all of this stuff. It looks, what would you call it? Bleak?
Abysmal.
Abysmal.
Embarrassing.
Embarrassing. Shocking. All those things are in the play. I wanted, in talking to Terrell Austin, I wanted to know why there's hope. Why does anybody, why, what are you hanging on to? Why could there be any reason to believe that this defense will turn it around? That was my question to Marvin. That was my question to Terrell. And in digging around on that, I'm not going to lie, I was kind of surprised to found what turned up. And Terrell Austin oversaw the 2015 Detroit Lions defense, which threw 8 games and then had a bye in week 9. The team was 1-7. They were dead last in the league in points allowed and in the bottom quarter of the league in total yards allowed. And that number was something like top 25 all time NFL history because so many yards nowadays. What would you call that? Abysmal. Bleak.
Embarrassing.
Right? All of those things. Second half of that season, they go 6-2. First game out of the break, they win in Green Bay for the first time in 20-plus years. They go 6-2. They finish in the top quarter of the league in points allowed and total yards allowed. So, is that going to happen? I have no idea. And in fact, odds are probably against it. However, the fact that there actually is some very relevant precedent to that, that this has, he's actually done this before, there's at least, there's that like glimmer, that like blinking light. It's like in Jurassic Park, the original, when they shut everything down in the park and everything goes dark, hold on to your butts moment, right?
Right.
And then off in the distance, you just see the one flicker. Blinking C prompt mm-hmm. on the computer. That's what it is. That's what this is. It doesn't mean that everything is going to restart. In fact, Samuel Jackson might still have to go to the other side of the compound and get eaten. However, this is the hope that maybe everyone won't get eaten by dinosaurs. Where it looks pretty bleak right now when you're shutting it down, there is currently a blinking C prompt.
The 2015 Detroit Lions.
That's what that is. That's what it is. Now, I really, spoiler alert to the 2018 Bengals and the residents of Jurassic Park. A whole lot of people got eaten by dinosaurs and everyone left on a helicopter. And the park did not open.
Right. And Samuel L. Jackson went on to get eaten by a shark in a later movie.
Yeah. Samuel Jackson has died in many ways. I believe he survived snakes on a plane, though.
I haven't seen that yet. Thanks for ruining the ending.
I just
assumed he got eaten.
I assume he survives. I haven't seen the end of it. I couldn't make it through. I made it through the first point where he yells, "Gotta get these goddamn snakes off this goddamn plane."
That's really all you need to see.
That's what I came for.
Yeah.
Right.
I got four things here for Wyatt. Ooh,
four things?
Yeah, four things.
Where did you like sound?
One.
Seriously, one is it cannot get worse, right?
That's correct.
I don't think it can get any worse.
That would be hard to do.
It would be very hard to do.
And that would also be historical if it got worse.
Definitely. Two is that while eight games is a perfectly fine sample size to determine if this is embarrassing or bad or ugly or whatever, I do think that it's going to balance out over the course of 16 games because they play the Panthers. The Bengals have already played the Panthers, the Falcons, Steelers, Chiefs, and the Bucks. And the only offense really that compares to those that group is the Saints, and then they get the Steelers last game of the year. I mean, they're going to – Chargers are okay. They're dealing
with – Yeah, Chargers have a decent offense.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon's injured a little bit. So I think that it's going to sort of have to balance out a little bit. When they go through this run with the Raiders and the Browns twice –
Ravens.
Broncos, Ravens. So I think it's going to – the stats are going to help balance it out there.
And let's look – I mean, we were kind of praising this offense after – defense after Miami when they sort of saved the day, where the offense really struggled. Defense showed up, particularly late in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Scored a couple of touchdowns.
Right.
So against not great offenses, mm-hmm. you know, like most teams, they are a little bit better chance of getting some occasional stops.
Right. Three would be Carl Lawson going out hurts very badly. Yeah. Carl going out hurts bad, but
yeah,
you're going to get Vigil and Denard back at some point. Perfect. I don't know if I'm going to list him in that group of his help, but
I mean,
we'll see.
You would get him back.
So there is some sort of help on the way. I can't remember what four is.
Three is a better number than four to have points.
I remember what four is.
What is four?
I do think that them traveling corners shows that they're not going to be completely rigid in this. They're not sort of entrenched in a they're trying to find ways. They're actually changing a philosophy Marvin's had for 30 years, right? Yeah. It's something that he kept through successful seasons in with the Ravens and all the way through his tenure here. They've never traveled corners ever under any team under Marvin.
Yeah.
And they did that against the Bucs. So I don't know that that'll happen again. Maybe it will, but I think it does show that they're trying to do – they're not just going to sit here and take these bad performances. They are trying to – I don't know if it really helped.
I mean, they I think they're willing to move personnel around. Darius right. Phillips popped up and took over for Tony McCray, and he's – for a fifth-round pick who had really not played at all hardly – he's shown fairly well. I mean, he's had his moments, but he's shown fairly well, much better than he did in camp and preseason. I mean, he was really bad in camp.
He's had three great tackles.
He's had some great tackles. Even though he hasn't always made the play, he seems to be right there in coverage. So there's maybe some hope, but he's still a fifth-round rookie, and that needs to be remembered too. But, you know, if Quez comes back, that changes things there, and that will happen relatively soon. Yeah, so I think you're right. I mean, the health thing is a big deal. They've got a lot of dudes out there. Although
those were not four things why this will get better. Those were four things why this won't get worse.
Yes,
that's what I was offering.
But you know what? There can always be more injuries.
That's true.
You lose Gino. If you lose Carlos, if you lose, you know, Lord knows if you lose any more corners. It's just so thin there. I mean, you know, Dre's going around on a half an Achilles right now, and Lord knows the troubles that he already has some of the time. You know, there's just not – next thing you know, you're looking on the street, you know. So, there can always be more injuries. I do want to bring in Terrell talking a little bit about some of this stuff. Under Fire spoke with us on Monday about all of this. And so I'm going to bring in about 5-10 minutes of Terrell Austin, and then we'll come back and we'll dive some into our midseason award stuff. All right, so here's Terrell Austin with reporters on Monday.
How do you see the process unfolding during the bye week?
Well, I think, you know, like everything, you go back and you evaluate what you're doing. I think we'll start probably with third downs. I think that's a huge issue. We've shown the ability at times. Like I think yesterday we started the game pretty decent on third down, and then we had a lull and couldn't get off the field, and you know, all those different things. So we'll probably start with our third downs, and then work our way with the big plays and find out what's happening. Is it something, you know? Is it scheme? Are we giving away a tell when we're doing a coverage that allows you know, people to get deep on us and all those different things? And you know, is it personnel? Whatever it is, we got to look at everything and decide what we got to do better moving forward. Because obviously, you know, the nice thing is our guys are finding ways to win, and that's the great thing. The bad thing is we could make it easier.
Right.
I mean, there's not many times I've been involved with a game where, you know, you had four turnovers, you scored a touchdown, six sacks, and you're in a dogfight.
Right.
It usually doesn't happen that way.
Right.
And so, you know, we'll just look at everything.
I mean, it's not an excuse to talk about injuries, but how much have having some of the new pieces in place affected what you're able to do and what you feel like is maybe the root of some of the problems? How much is that, or is that?
Nah, you can't ever use that because Every team in the league has it. You have injuries, guys are beat up, guys are banged up, and it's, you know, you have to have that next man up mentality, because if you don't, then you allow guys to accept performing less than their best. And so, you know, we've got to look again at how we're doing it, what we're doing, and try to get it fixed. And I think our guys are, you know, our guys are obviously receptive to that, and they're open to that and to deal with it.
You've also run into a buzzsaw this first half with so many offenses that are so high-powered around the league, points, yards, unprecedented. What is it like to sort of be a defensive coordinator in these times? Does it feel like sometimes you're trying to keep your head above water?
Absolutely. It's a tough job. But I think that, you know, scoring's up, yards are up around the league. And so I think the biggest thing that again, that we can do to help ourselves is eliminate the big plays, because that'll keep, I mean, you look at it, we gave up, on two plays, we gave up 132 pass yards. Okay? You take those two plays out, and then you turn the ball over like we did, and we got ourselves, you know, we'll still give up 300 plus yards, maybe 350, maybe 370, but it would be a pretty good defensive outing. And so, I mean, I think that's the nature of it now. I think that's what, you know, the NFL wants more yards, more scoring, and they're getting it. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, there's a lot of good quarterbacks, a lot of good receivers. This field's being, you know, it's been opened up, and it's like fast break basketball. And that makes it tough.
I mean, I know it's the bye. You can't do anything massive, I guess, but You have to make changes structurally, or is it just a personnel issue?
No, we're gonna look at whatever we got to do, and if it's structure or personnel, whatever it is that we have to do to get better, that's what we're gonna do. So, I don't think anything's off the table. You ever say anything's off the table in this league, because the bottom line is you're judged on wins and losses, and at the end of the year, if we win enough games, they'll talk about how we didn't. To talk about how we didn't win enough games, or how we could have won a couple extra games, not how many yards we gave up.
Right. What about where you're at right now makes you think that it's going to get better? Is there something that you see that you feel like you believe in?
Absolutely. I love the way our guys fight, and that we can make the plays, and that some of the plays that are getting us, we've defended them. And so to me, that just means we have to be more consistent in how we defend them. And so that's the thing, like you know, and that's what's, again, as a sometimes it's frustrating, because you know, hey, wait a second, I've seen us defend it in practice, I've seen us do it in a game, but then there's be another time in the game when we don't do it, and so you go, okay, and we just got to get to the root of the problem as to why the inconsistency, why sometimes we're good, sometimes we're not, and so that's our job. So.
Has this stretch rattled you at all, or about what your thought was on what this defense could be, or made you had to rethink what you thought you had here at all, just this first half?
No, because I think at the end of the day, I looked at it like this. I go, we're 5-3, we're right in the thick of it, and we can only get better.
Right.
And we can only get better. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's how I think. I think sometimes, you know, when you're too – you know, you're down on everything and you lose sight of the big picture. And the big picture is, hey, can we win games and do we have room to improve? And I think we've won games and we can still win. We have to win more games and we have room to improve. And so to me, that's the biggest thing. I would much rather play great football from the bye week on than have played 8 weeks of great football and then all of a sudden we start drifting and going down. And so that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to our guys playing a lot better football in the second half.
All right, so there's Terrell Austin. You know, I thought really interesting things to say, and you know, if he doesn't get it fixed, you know, the seat gets really hot for him, because they have so many other things in place, and I don't, you know, I wonder if Mike and Marvin, but mostly Mike, would have learned a lesson from keeping Ken Zampezi after a very bad first season, only to let go of him two games in, and that essentially tanking two seasons when they had the gut feeling that they probably needed to move on after one, if that would play itself out with Terrell Austin, if the second half looks like the first half, they would say, let's not do to ourselves what we did last time and bring him back on a hot seat and jeopardize losing everything, rather let's just cut our losses and start over and give somebody an entire offseason to start this thing up. I'm just saying, if he doesn't get it right, I do think that what happened is going to be part of the conversation that Marvin and Mike have about Terrell Austin here.
Yeah, no, in no other forum is what you will do inevitably you should do right now. No more is that applicable than in coaching or in sports.
Especially how hard it is to change midseason. Right. I mean, it's an almost impossible task to do.
Unless you're like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right. For a coach, for someone who's looking to have his scheme and whatever, like it's just
not going to happen. happen.
It's you can make small changes and do what you want, but for the most part, you know, it's unfair to everybody when that happens to have expectations that suddenly things are going to be great. We saw that with Bill Lazor. I don't know if Terrell Austin is going to turn this thing around, but there's one blinking light in the corner computer that makes you think maybe we won't all get eaten by dinosaurs. That's what we've got. All right. So we always do at the midway point, 8 games in, which luckily for us, when we have 2 weeks of content to fill where we make stuff up, comes right during the bye week, and that means mid-year awards.
Your sound effects have been
on point. Sound effects are on point. I'm really into sound effects today. So mid-season awards, which they call them awards. They should not totally be called awards because some of them are very not great to have. We don't like to be all positive here. Try to, you know, I got to be Paul Downer Jr. as well. That's just part of the deal. So we've got a little bit of everything. Let's just kind of go through a list of some things. I don't know, for all transparency, I have no idea what you have chosen. You have no idea some of these that I have chosen. So maybe we can do that dumb game where we say them at the same time. Yeah. You want to do that?
We could look at, well, I thought you were going to say we could try to like.
Oh, have, like if we had signs and we turned them, but I don't have signs and it's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
So we're just going to say them at the same time.
Okay.
You want to
like
do that?
I like that.
I mean, it's like the newlywed game or something.
A little bit. Well, right? You know, we're still in the honeymoon phase.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So. First half MVP on three.
Okay.
1, 2, 3. Andy Dalton. I don't think it should be much debate. He's played fantastically. And when everything's fallen around him, he's held it together. And really, if you just take late game drives alone into play, he's kind of willed this team to a 5-3 record.
Certainly, you know, his completion percentage this season's better than his career average. 17 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 7.2 yards per attempt. That's his career average. That's what he's doing right now. But I just think just the Atlanta drive, what they did against the Steelers late, and then against Tampa Bay, I think Andy sort of, as Doc calls him, he's Mr. Elevation Man right now.
Yeah, he has. He has. He's done the one thing that everybody says that he can't. When they've lost, it's been hard to blame him.
Right.
Pittsburgh, I have a hard time blaming him. Carolina, there were some bad, his receivers really let him down in Carolina. I mean, John Ross, that was the John Ross quits game.
Man, Josh Malone doesn't come back to the ball.
Went to the dughouse after that one.
Yep.
The Hail Mary was a pick in that game. But he just, there was not a whole lot of help. His defense let up 250 yards on the ground. I mean, if we asked everybody in this building, I think you'd have a hard time finding anybody else. Maybe AJ, but even AJ isn't even leading the team in yards and receptions. I don't know. All right, defensive player of the year. Defensive player of the year. 1, 2, 3.
Geno Atkins.
Yeah. I actually struggled with this a little bit.
You could go a lot of ways.
Because there aren't a whole lot of players of the year on that defense.
Right.
But Geno was – hasn't been as great the last couple weeks as we have seen, but I think teams are focusing on him even more. But he still – even when other guys do things, it's usually because of Geno. So I could argue Carlos has had a really great season. He's made some huge plays.
Been disruptive.
Been really disruptive. He's made some really big plays that caused turnovers. I mean, go back even to Indy when they didn't count. And, you know, he's had strip sacks, forced interceptions, the one in Miami to help put that game away for Sam Hubbard. He's had a lot of huge plays, but a lot of stuff. He has a lot of. What is he up to? 7 sacks now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of those have come because Geno has forced guys to him. I think at its core, it's Geno. But you could probably combo them: the two money men who got paid have been the two guys that when this defense has made a difference, those have been the two guys.
Yeah, I came down to three players here. Jesse Bates was third.
Yep.
Carlos second. Geno has 29 hurries. So Carl Lawson and Carlos Dunlap combined have 30 hurries. So Geno is, he's been around the ball a lot the past few weeks, just hasn't really gotten home to get that sack. But his stats are ridiculous.
Yeah. He's been one of the most disruptive players in the NFL. Top, as per his standard. This was a great first half for him, even by his pretty high standards. So I'll give you that. It's hard to go another direction, although I was tempted. Okay, let's go into biggest surprise. I think this could go a number of different ways.
I think we're gonna say the same thing.
You do?
I do.
All right, maybe we will. Biggest surprise. 1, 2, 3.
Offensive
Tyler Boyd.
Line.
All right. Okay. All right. So offensive line. That's a good one.
Well, I just don't know. Again, I wish I could have been here in August, but I do understand that there was a lot of angst, especially on that right side, and that will remain.
That's because you listened to all those podcasts while you were trying to get this job.
That's all you guys talked about. I've looked into the Westerman Hive a little bit. And,
yeah.
I've typed in some weird hashtags about this line, but I think that you can individually ding a couple of those guys, Redmond and Hart especially. I think Cordy Glenn's had some high moments and some low moments, and but collectively, they're getting the job done. Mm-hmm. So I certainly think that's a surprise.
I would agree with you on that. Tyler Boyd becoming the man from a guy who was a healthy scratch and off the face of the earth last year to not only becoming a productive slot receiver, but a go-to number two receiver, to me, was the biggest surprise of this year. Now, we go back to camp and he was having a great camp, but still, would that translate? We'd seen him have a good camp before. There was a lot of momentum for him. They ditched Brandon LaFell. I get all of that, but still, I still think for him to be as good as he's been, his numbers are up there. He has more receptions than AJ, and his yards are almost the same. He's got all kinds of touchdowns. He's been the difference maker for them because it was never more apparent than against Tampa. Tampa says anybody but AJ, and Tyler Boyd just slices them up. When you've got that, it has changed everything for this offense, and it's been a huge leap for him. And even the offensive line, I could hear that argument. But Tyler's been really good. It's a close one. It's a close one.
I want to clarify here.
Yeah.
I have Tyler Boyd slotted for another award.
You can win multiple awards.
That's true. But I did want to spread it out a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's not an award I think we're going to discuss here. So
okay.
It could be a teaser for you guys.
Teaser. Yeah. Got to read. We need those clicks or else we get fired and don't do the podcast anymore.
I'll have to be like a consultant like Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. Consultant to the artist formerly known as the BBP. Yeah, it's an obscure title that we probably also wouldn't hire, I'm guessing. So, all right. Others, I say honorable mentions. Jesse Bates, who you mentioned, I think he's been fantastic. That has been a pleasant surprise. Again, it falls into that same realm of, okay, yeah, they traded George Iloka for this guy, so they clearly, but still, he's still a rookie. You still don't know.
And he's been lights out.
He's been lights out.
One of the best safeties in the league.
Yeah.
According to grades.
If you look at the PFFers.
Yeah.
And who knows how they have graded him out. He has made some mistakes, but he's done what they thought he could do. He's got three interceptions. He's got a pick six now. Mm-hmm. He's had PBUs. He's been a good tackler, which was the knock on him. Is he going to be able to be a good tackler? And he really has been. So Jesse Bates, I would put up there as well. Do you have any honorable mentions?
I had a CJ Uzama.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's necessarily surprising. It's just one of those situations where unfortunately, injuries sort of cleared the way, and he stepped up and did his thing. So I don't know that it's surprising necessarily that he's playing well, but I don't know that you could have predicted the production he's had. I mean, he's certainly on pace for a career year.
Also, honorable mention inside of your award would be Trey Hopkins.
Yes, certainly.
Who would have thought he would come in and be as good at center as center. He's been? Now, Marv did properly dispel. I gave him the opportunity to on Monday. Billy Price will be the starting center when he returns, and that will be, it does appear, that will be next week or the next game. What happens with Trey Hopkins? I think it's just maybe. You have a good situation where you're comfortable in your backup right guard and center now if you need it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that, considering they didn't have a whole lot of comfort there pretty much for the last 2.5 years at almost any position. So, all right. Biggest disappointment. Biggest disappointment. You ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
Linebackers. Austin. Okay.
That's about both. Wait. Both connected.
Yeah, actually, both connected. I think I'm getting confused again. I think I did say defense, but I'll go with the linebackers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, Preston Brown led the league in tackles last year, right?
Yep.
And I know he's injured. He did have that great quote about crawling.
And I hate tackle stats.
Yes, crawling to the bye week.
Yeah.
You know, he's struggled. Obviously, Vontaze, we've sort of belabored him. Expecting more coming off the suspension, just hasn't been there. Now, he's injured. You need those young guys to do what you need them to continue to progress along. Jordan Evans.
The Nick Vigil injury killed this
Nick
team.
Nick Vigil killed him, yes.
Vigil was playing really well, and he was holding that group that was already thin together, and his injury had a ripple effect. I think that has forced a lot of these young guys that you now need to step up, and they just
haven't shown.
Hardy Nickerson was a disaster. Been a disaster.
And you know, Jefferson's sort of not been.
Yeah, can we address Malik Jefferson? Actually, this is important. I get a lot of questions about why is Malik Jefferson not playing. And so I guess it's hard to really explain how lost he was in camp and preseason.
Uh-huh.
Like, really lost, I guess. I mean, he, to the point that people were discussing this guy's a bust, like people, important people. Is he a bust? Because he was so lost and so bad in camp and constantly getting beat. And then in a preseason game, he'd go out and run into the wrong gap, and the dude would run 70 yards around the right side. Didn't seem to get it. He had a good last preseason game against Indianapolis where maybe he figured some things out. But there still is not a lot of trust in him because he did not instill much trust in him earlier. They have proven they will play you as a rookie if you show trust. You're trustworthy. Sam Hubbard, Jesse Bates. Let's go down the line of rookies. Billy Price, all of them playing.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Hubbard drafted one spot in front of Malik Jefferson. They're the same guy. Sam Hubbard played 64% of the – he's playing all the time. They've got him playing on offense even. Malik Jefferson, trust me, that position, as bad as it's been, if he was any good or showing trust, he would be getting a chance right now.
Right.
Darius Phillips played 81% of the snaps on Sunday. He was a fifth-round draft pick because they have more trust in him than other guys that they have around him. They need anybody to step up in that room, and they ain't seen it from Malik Jefferson. Now, I know it's easy to say he needs to play. He was a third-round pick. But, you know, at a certain point, what you show in practice and is who you are, and obviously they do not feel like he has anywhere near enough of a clue to go out there and be playing right now.
Well, the Vigil injury just sort of kills him because he has such a skill set that's so unique. He's almost like a third safety out there.
Yeah.
He can play sideline to sideline, and he's all over the place. And if without him, you're sort of stuck with, well, then maybe you've got two 250-pound linebackers in Preston and Vontaze together, or you got to throw Vinny Ray out there.
Jordan Evans probably needs to be on the field as like he was this past week.
Right.
Like, he's problematic at times too, but at least he's fast and can cover a little bit. I mean, that's at least his forte. They get thrown on. The linebackers are just, we had the PFF stat last week where they had allowed 10 more first downs when targeted than any other linebacking group in the entire league. They're the most targeted. They have the most yards upon, the most first downs. That's what's happening. All this third down crap that we talk about, it comes back to them dropping back and finding the linebacker matchups. Because these linebackers can't cover a soul, and they haven't. No one in this building at linebacker has covered a soul since like 1982, and it's killing them right now.
Who were those linebackers on the 2015 Detroit Lions?
That's a good question. I'd have to.
We need to do an oral history of the 2015. Tullock.
I mean, honestly, it was funny when I started coming across that blinking light. I sort of was like, I feel like I should call up. We got to dial up Schwartzy and Caldwell, I guess. Caldwell was there. I don't know. Schwartzy had to have been gone. It had to have been Jim Caldwell. And was Stephen Tulloch? Tahir Whitehead, maybe?
Tahir Whitehead.
I'm trying to think who else would have been on that.
Darius Slay.
Darius Slay. He's a corner.
Right, but he played 1,000 snaps that season.
Darius Slay. I mean, look. An interesting. I almost felt like it was time to like dial him up and go oral history time to figure out how Terrell made that happen. The fact that it did is something. So anyway, disappointment. Terrell Austin for me. It kind of goes hand in hand. Yeah. But I think the fact that this defense has not gelled as a whole, despite having a lot of playmakers, the fact that they do have guys that can rush, they do have guys that can cover. They haven't always rushed as well as they've needed to. They haven't always covered as well as they needed to, and they've looked generally confused. Miscommunications, missed assignments, dudes running free. Look, it needed to be better than that. It's taken too long. The honeymoon period is over, and that's the macro of your micro to the same
right answer.
All right, coach of the year, coach of the mid-year. 1, 2, 3, Frank Pollock. Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you, man. Well, they clearly won the trade with Dallas.
Certainly.
Yeah. that we all can admit. He's done a great job with those guys. Even Bobby Hart, who Lord knows has his warts. Look, he hasn't been a total train wreck. I'd suggest that's a pretty big deal. And he's been better than they've had at right tackle the last few years, arguably. And Alex Redmond has not been great. He's given up a ton of pressures. But yet the group as a whole has held it down. They're top 10 in the league and fewest sacks allowed. Joe Mixon's averaging 4.8 yards per carry. Gio Bernard's averaging 4.6 yards per carry. Their offense is a top 10 group. They have not been a liability, and they've had a backup center, and Frank Pollock has patched it together and had a lot of guys liking what they're doing and developing a personality, as Marvin Lewis said to us yesterday, and a story that I'm looking forward to writing later this week on the fact that, man, look at this. Who would have saw that coming when we were sitting here at the break?
I like this Bobby Hart defense. The next time I come under fire on the home front or in the office, I'm going to be like, look, I haven't been a total disaster.
Right. Well,
what more do you want from me?
And anybody that ever you knew what you were getting with me. Like, you knew what you were marrying.
You knew it wasn't going to be great, yeah. But it hasn't been bad.
Exactly. I feel like I've gone above expectations, which right. I kept low on purpose.
Hey, Bobby Hart's been pretty good in pass blocking, and Alex Redmond's been pretty good in run blocking.
Mm-hmm.
Not so good on the vice versa.
I will say, I mean, Alex Redmond gives up a lot of pressures, but yet he has not allowed a lot of sacks.
But they each have something they can hang their hat on.
Yeah, correct. But the bottom line is, as a whole, you know, they're not nobody on the offense is as consistent as they want them to be right now, but. Look, when you look at the big picture, and they're not giving up a ton of sacks. Their pressure's relatively low. You're averaging 4.8 yards per carry with your bell cow.
All their tight ends that were chipping and rubbing and
have not been playing as much. They've moved to three wide sets, right. So there's not as much help.
Right.
credit bill laser as well with the chips and the rubs and the tugs, the things that's going on over there. But, you know, the pinches. I think it's got to be Frank Pollock. You know, you could make an argument for Bill Lazor, but I think the lull maybe drops him back behind Frank.
Yeah.
He's just done a fantastic job.
Well, the expectations were so low that, you know, it's pretty easy for him to win this award.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's exceeded.
Most pressure on them in the second half. Okay.
I should have saved the linebackers for this.
Yeah. This may be the same as we had.
We're going to flip.
Okay. Most pressure on them in the second half is 1, 2, 3, Terrell Austin. Yeah. Okay. I think it has to be.
Yeah.
I cannot pin it down to a single person on this defense because there's too many people that have been problematic. It all comes back to him. If he can fix it, this team actually could do something. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is what this second half probably comes down to. I don't see the offense having some backslide. I really don't. I think that they're still on solid ground, especially if they start getting a few guys healthy. I mean, they've been really banged up too. I really don't, barring injury to 14 or 18. Or maybe 83.
Mixon,
well, once Gio comes back, they've survived that before. So I think this season comes down to that guy.
I think you're right.
All right. So that gets us through this week. So there's I'm not happy that that my name is still on the front of being made fun of in the open. I don't know how. I was feeling and looking.
You made a few
like
comments.
A genius.
You made a few comments when it was 34-16.
It felt like it was time to comment.
I got a few tweets.
At 34-16, it felt like, man, I did this just right. I even thought my score might hit. But inevitably, they came back and kept it within a possession. So I lost this week's bet. And that now goes. It's the first bet I've lost. We had a push on the rib off in Kansas City.
Yeah, zero. That's embarrassing.
Zero versus zero. It is embarrassing. It's sad. I'm offended. So what is it going to be? Where are we going to go this week? Bye week. We got a bye week coming. There's not a whole lot going on. Where are we going to go? While we think about that, how about today and Kanye?
I don't have an update on Kanye. You know what? I've gone. I have.
What has
had
happened
a,
to you?
No, it's
this
now,
is
he
sad.
He does have an album supposedly coming out at the end of November. Supposed to come out on Black Friday. It's called Yandy.
Okay.
I was able to salvage that. That's not new news, but it might be to anybody on this podcast who hates Kanye.
I'm just shocked that we've made it to this point in the morning and you
really
have
haven't
not
mentioned
Googled
him.
Kanye yet.
I haven't. You know what? I've moved on in my life right now.
Yeah.
But I did want to say about I caught some tweets about early in the game, and I got to tell everybody out there two rules. First rule is don't tweet. Second rule is don't tweet early. So I don't need second
you caught
quarter
some tweets.
Oh yeah, once the Bengals got up by. When it was like 27-9.
Yeah.
And then 34-16. I got a couple of, close game, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't do it.
I saw a couple ball games uttered as well. And not just by Joe Twitter, but by other people in the media. And I just remember thinking, maybe, but let's not. There will be, again. It's like Cancun. No night is over when you think it is.
No, that's right.
It can always go longer. It can always go into the morning.
And it can get better.
Or much worse.
Maybe just a smidge better or a lot worse.
Mostly the later it gets, the worse it can get.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a roller coaster I live on. You know, this was I've taken so many bad beats in my life.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I've been doing this since 87, taking bad beats. This, for me, though, was vindication.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I enjoyed it. Because I'm staring down the barrel of overtime.
Right. No one wants that.
You're looking at a rewrite?
No, a massive rewrite.
I didn't take pride or enjoyment in this.
No.
But I did. I was wanting to clap back on some tweets.
Yeah, don't clap back. That's also
rule three.
Don't clap back. Only bad things happen when you clap back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's hard, and sometimes I've fallen victim of violating my own rule.
Yeah, you can.
I prefer to just let it go, mm-hmm. or mute,
delete Twitter,
or block, or delete Twitter, or delete the entire Twitter. Yeah, also in play. We got BTS tonight. How about we do, since this is your first ever live BTS, Fletcher Page Flubs. Will there be one?
I'm going to keep it real tight and concise tonight.
A single flub. Will there be a single flub?
So what constitutes a flub?
I feel like definitely a lost thought. Definitely a major stumble over words.
What about we have somebody fact check me if I make like stats
factual
error
for sure.
Make a name wrong.
Name wrong. Yes, flub. Definitely factual errors or anything said incorrectly. It counts. And I would say I'll call it a significant word stumbling or freezing Gio Bernard on Cam Newton style.
Well, see, I'm excited about this. This is my first live remote.
Yes.
Holy Grail, I'm excited to get out there.
Yeah, meet the people. Your people.
That's right.
Somebody will probably bring cookies. It happens. I don't recommend eating them, though. Like, I feel like I don't trust people that just bring cookies to public places.
What a sad world it is. You can't eat a cookie. That's gifted.
You've been around this place? I'm just saying. You can't trust a cookie. All right.
All right. We'll see about a flub.
So we'll put a flub on the line.
Well, so it's just all on me.
It's all on you this week. You keep it clean and you win. I'm betting on a flub.
All right.
We'll see if you shall flub. If you want to watch the flub happen live, you can watch at Cincinnati.com. Of course, the whole episode will be archived up on the site later this week with Sam Hubbard. Or come on down. Come on down. Say what's up. Hang out with us. We'll be back with the BBP next week. We'll dive a little bit into New Orleans and some of the other stuff going on. We'll see what happens. You never know. Sometimes there's news this time of year, so hopefully there's not too much news, but if there is, we've got it covered for you. Look forward to bringing that up, and maybe there will be a flub. Maybe there won't. We'll see. We'll talk to you next week.